expectations. It's like you grew up with someone your whole life, have all these memories, all these events in your head of this person being there with you through everything. They went through it all, the happiness and the disappointments of life. When they start turning negative towards you, it feels like your insides start to boil and it gets confusing. Why are they treating me this way? Are my thoughts. What did I do to upset them? Then there is the sickening feeling of knowing you didn't do anything. The real reason is that they have become someone that is different and choose to treat you indifferent. How do you recover from that? Where is the loyalty? How do you trust again if the person that has been with you the longest and should know you the most and should know that their indifference to you is hurting you? How? Then, friendship and love. I really hate when people mess with my emotions. I'm calm and still by default, I think, in control. When they come along and throw these bullshit lies that they care and they start to become dear to me because I believe them. I truly believe they care about me. And as I try to get close, it always surprises me when they pull back. The guys I have stayed with have been by my side and don't fight my efforts. If you show effort, I will respond. That's why men are persistent. They know it works. They like the chase. He chased. It is the game to test if you're interested and worth the time. He was friendly. I enjoyed his energy. But I think it's the belief of him, yet again, I fell for. The idea that they are good. They are my friends. That they don't want anything more than my friendship and love. Getting to know someone and appreciating the person they truly are and the person they will become. My belief has blinded me more than once. Betrayal. You don't know betrayal until it is your own flesh and blood who push you away and reject you. Siblings, parents, and children are supposed to have the strongest love for each other. Being denied causes a heartbreak that is so great, it tears the soul. It changes your being. The story of a little bitch. That's what he said after he put me up against the wall and told me to think about it, to think about the things I've done to him that hurt, the words and actions that I didn't mean to hurt with. I said I was sorry, but saying sorry wasn't good enough. He wanted to hear me say it. He wanted to break me and hear me say, I'll do anything for you. I'll change my ways. I'll try not to hurt your feelings. I'll treat you like gold and be your woman without question. He wanted to defeat me, make me succumb to his will whenever he wanted. But you know what I said? I said, fuck that, and left. I won't be brought down to a man's will. I'm not going to kneel when I didn't do anything wrong. I said, I was sorry, but that's the way I am. And if I hurt your feelings, perhaps you're too much of a little bitch to be with me. And then he cried like the bitch that he was. Don't do this. My thoughts. I'm so angry, but I don't say a word, though my mind is exploding with emotion. My fingertips burn. My spirit is in turmoil, and you walk away. My thoughts. Don't do this to me. Why are you doing this? I thought you loved me. Haven't I proved my love to you? Aren't I good enough? And what you're saying to me is shattering me. Tears run down my face. It's breaking me. It feels like a rip in my being. Don't do this. Please. I whisper, and more tears run down my face. Snow globe. Like a snow globe, we were living in a bubble that protected us from the outside, where no one could hurt us, an area we created for us by our rules, our terms, in order to live happily. But when you left, our world shattered. My thoughts raced for days. Who am I? What am I? Where do I belong? I feel so disconnected from the big world. How did this happen? I did this to myself because I was afraid, afraid of the world. Now I'm alone. I'm alone in this broken glass, weighed down by the water, and I can't move. It hurts to move. I feel so alone. I kept them out, and now no one knows I exist. No one knows I'm here. As I pick up the pieces of my life, the cuts I gather bleed out. I'm depleted of life, and my body feels heavy, and my spirit feels dark. Help, I whisper weakly. I wait. But as I wait, no one comes. And as I wait, my cuts heal themselves, just like when I was a child. My cuts healed. And now I am scarred. I know what happened between us happened for a reason. I am who I am today because I changed. I needed new skin, tougher skin. I am not tainted by experience. I am evolved. I am new, grown out of the ash of my destroyed life. The Sequoia series. How amazing and unique are these trees? Sequoias are life-enduring and strong. The extreme climate and altitude of their surroundings cultivated these giants. It is a passionate tree that has been ignited by fire to properly grow. They are resistant of fungus, disease, and flames. Neither forces can destroy them. Only when gravity and the mass of their own weight pulls them down, with the sequoia's roots torn out of the soil, do they die of natural causes. Evolution at its finest. These trees live up to 3,200 years old, at a height up to 311 feet tall and 40 feet in diameter. They are the true living giants. The Forest of Treasure. There is a stone who conceals itself more than most, on a mountain enjoying the view of his forest. No ordinary stone this is. His appearance is hidden under shadows. He is one of the brightest stones of all. There is no other stone like him in the land. He demands respect and has authority over his mountain of forest. Hidden beneath are stones more precious than gold. The knowledge of his forest is immense, but he is not wise. He has much to learn and to see of the world outside his forest of treasures. But the world outside is a darker, treacherous land. with creatures that destroy everything that is pure and innocent. Risk is not something that the stone is willing to give. The trees around are the gates of his heart, and only the kind and the genuine may enter the stone's forest. One day, a maiden of brightness enters. She was filled with sorrow and loneliness. She becomes lost and disillusioned in the forest. I'm going to start all over. The Forest of Treasure. There is a stone who conceals itself more than most, on a mountain enjoying the view of his forest. No ordinary stone this is. His appearance is hidden under shadows. He is one of the brightest stones of all. There is no other stone like him in the land. He demands respect and has authority over his mountain of forest. Hidden beneath are stones more precious than gold. The knowledge of his forest is immense, but he is not wise. He has much to learn and see of the world outside his forest of treasures. But the world outside is a dark and treacherous land, with creatures that destroy everything that is pure and innocent. Risk is not something the stone is willing to give. The trees around are the gates of his heart. Only the kind and genuine may enter the stone's forest. One day, a maiden of brightness enters. She was filled with sorrow and loneliness. She becomes lost and disillusioned in the darkness of the forest. With trunks thick and massive, they surround her. But the maiden is not afraid. She feels at home and safe with him. Time is spent together as she wanders, and the stone accepts her in his forest. He gives her his sacred entrance only friends and family hold, and she gives him the love he always wanted. But alas, the lovers must part. Grief-stricken, he leaves her in silence and pushes her out into the cold. Stunned and heartbroken, she leaves. Lioness. In the darkness, there is... Lioness. In the darkness, there was a flower who was without sunlight. Her life was on the brink of wilting, without happiness. Without love, she was losing hope. When a young lioness wandered in, a lioness looking for a companion, looking for someone to love and to be loved in return, to be accepted for her true beauty and mind. While walking in the cave of abyss, she heard the tears of the flower. She walked in and found the flower. She gave the gift of compassion, the best gift you can give, because it shows the love you have for another. When the flower received her gift, she began to blossom with the light the lioness brought into her life. A bond of trust was created between them, and they broke the darkness that held them. They helped each other to be better, stronger individuals. And they created a path of light in hope, and together they walked out of the darkness into their new life of friendship, the best form of love. Ember. There's an ember in a pile of burning wood that smolders slowly and brightly. It lies in wait for his love, the wind. The wind Ember. There's an ember in a pile of burning wood that smolders slowly and brightly. It lies in wait for his love, the wind. The ember lives for the wind. He waits patiently for his breeze to pass. The wind gives meaning and life to the ember, because when they combined, when they are finally together, the ember blazes with the wind. In that moment, they intertwine, they become... Ember. There's an ember in a pile of burning wood that smolders slowly and brightly. It lies in wait for his love, the wind. The ember lives for the wind. He waits patiently for his breeze to pass. The wind gives meaning and life to the ember, because when they are finally together, the ember blazes with the wind. In the moment, they intertwine, they combine in heat. Together they blaze for a moment of heat in passion. Okay. The elements. Water is life. Water is tender, water is gentle, water is a slow destruction, water clears, it purifies the soul. Fire. Fire is energetic, it's passion. Fire is fast, fire is temperamental, fire is quick to burn, fire is a rapid destruction, fire is passion. Fire burns out quickly. Air. Air is free. Air has no limits. Air is always traveling. Air moves. It instigates all the other elements. Air has no bounds. Air has no structure. Earth. Earth is strong. Earth is stable. Earth is slow. Earth is rough. Earth changes slowly and evolves in extreme over long periods of time. Warmth. Fire types bring me warmth. Warm up my tender wounds. Love me passionately. Such a nice sculpted body. I don't like the cold. It's too cold. It hurts me. Don't get too comfortable. Keep it fresh. Be thankful, respectful, appreciate each other, love each other, spend time together, make time to talk, just like we used to. Heart in a cage. There is a heart around. Heart in a cage. There is a cage around your heart. A cage that surrounds the being within each one of us. It is wielded by emotional iron and steel. Every hurt creates a bend that binds the cage tighter. Defense is its purpose. Fear is the expression of the cage. Temptress. I am the temptress. I am the one to touch, the one whose passionate lips to lie on, to make you feel full and satisfied. Your fingertips will electrify my skin. Respond to me. My breasts soften your temper. My legs wrap around your manhood. My arms around your strength. I will feel the real you. I will love the real you. I will devour you. My love reaches into your soul and unravels tensions to unlock your heart. I am free, but when I am with you, I am yours to keep, yours to swallow, and yours to love, and to create a deep happiness. Enter your heart and release the tensions within. Energy. There is a burning inside me, a feeling of yearning. Fire dwells within our veins. Water carries the chaos through a path. There is a burning inside each one of us, a power to create, to destroy, mold a thought, and release a passion. Tattoo, black appearance. When the heat is not present between us, there is no sense of reason and love isn't connected. The relationship is materialistic. The bond. Love is the center. Love is respect, understanding, caring, and being appreciated of each other. Fire. There is logic to the irrational feeling of passion. It is a connection of the physical plane, a chemistry between us, together. You need all three to win my heart. The logic of our material world, know the passion of my body, and love my spirit. Destined for greatness. Burn the past, but never forget it. The destruction won't be forgotten. Creating the path of the present, a new life grows. History is behind us. Face forward, look forward. New roads to tread. New life begins with green grass under the moon, under the loving moon. Good person. Inside, there is a good person. Inside, a person who means well, who means to be good. Outside, there is yellow. There is happiness, a happy person, smiling, loving things to love and be loved. There is a middle, a controller of the inside, covered by the outside, a sealer of the pain kept inside me, of the sadness that is scarred within, a container holding my entire being together. The dating game. I disrespect myself. Trying to find love, trying to be loved, I'm not a fuck up. I respect what I want, and when I don't see it in someone, I leave. Easy as that. I don't want to lead anyone on. I don't want to invest in something I don't believe in. I'm trying to find them. I'm trying to believe in a feeling that means love. I'm trying. I keep trying and failing. And I don't want to be alone. I want a honey to love me and to take care of me. Trust me. It's so cold. It feels so cold when you're around me and all I think is love me. Care about me because I love you. I'll love you unconditionally. It doesn't matter what we have done or gone through. I'll take care of you. I love you for you. Trust me, and I won't hurt you. Please give me some loving. That's all I ever wanted. I would rather read the ink on the pages of my books, live in fantasy, in the realm where people love each other and parents love a daughter, respect each other, where no one lives. I only do in my head, where no one can hurt me, where the lies aren't unseen, where truth is apparent and a friend is a friend, family is family, and they are not your foes in shadows. Suicide. I had a friend once whose voice was strong and touch was kind. His life was a long, lonely walk in a forest of shadows. People were but mere shadows in his living darkness. Though all he had to do was touch a shadow, to reach out to someone, a lover, a friend, to live in company instead of the abyss. He chose not to, and now his spirit lives among the shadows, where the joy and sorrow of life do not touch him. One or the other. To live is to love. To love is to feel pain. To feel pain is to feel life. If you can't have one, you have none. That's it. Yeah. What do you mean? No. What? What?
Do you want to talk a little bit?
About what?
Just you and your writing and...
Oh, you wanted to interview me or something, right?
Well, I just want you... I want to put together a profile, so... Your name?
Eileen Felix.
And what's your website?
www.efelixstudios.com.
What motivates you to write?
I would have to say my major motivation is experience. Things that I experience that I feel have changed me in some way or in another.
A lot of your writing has to do with relationships in your life.
Yes. I think that the most profound things that can happen and affect somebody is a relationship they have with other people.
Last night, it was your first time reading your material in front of people at the last bookstore.
Yes.
What was that like?
That was very... it wasn't as scary as I thought it was. It was very interesting. It was very warm. People were very accepting of what we all had to share. And that's why throughout the whole night, it started, I think, at 8:15. It went on till 11, and we happily waited till everybody said what they had to say because they heard what we had to say. So it was a give and take. It was a sharing. It was very intimate. It was only about 30 people. So it was something I'd like to do again.
What do you get from writing? What is the result of the thoughts in your head and then it being put on paper, so to speak? What do you get from that?
You know, it's funny. I was actually looking at the definition of creative writing. And as I was looking at the definition of creative writing, I found a couple. And one of the things that striked me was the fact that it said, writing to make yourself feel better. And for me personally, I do that, but I also do it so that I can logically see how I feel. And a lot of people think when you go through life feeling or going by your gut or going by what feels right to you, that that's stupid, that's illogical. But in a lot of ways, I feel that how you feel is very logical. And when you write it down, you can say to yourself and say to somebody else, this is what happened. This is why it hurt me. This is why I feel this way.
So you're saying that there's logic to your reaction to the outside world and the interactions you have with people, but by putting it on paper, it allows you to somewhat organize that whole experience.
Yes, because people get so frustrated, they get so heated up, they get so, I'm pissed and I want to break something and I want to kill somebody, and you just, why are you feeling this way? Why are you so heated up? What's wrong with you? Why are you, people look at that and they say, you're crazy. Why are you letting out so much emotion? When in fact, there's a lot of logic to it. You feel upset because your morals or your past has been brought up, or you feel wronged. That's why you're upset, because you feel wronged and you don't feel acknowledged. And I feel that, instead of me trying to go out there and be angry and be upset and be a total bitch about it, because I can if I wanted to, I'd rather write it down, figure out why I'm upset. If I see why I'm upset, I can validate it to myself and say, this is why I'm upset. This is what happened. I'm not crazy.
I feel like a lot of the things that you write reflect situations you've been in where people haven't given you the credit that you deserve for certain things that you do, or how you act, or how you look at the world. There's a battle between you and your father as to him trusting that his daughter is able to handle certain things or make the right decisions. A lot of that seems to come out in your writing.
Yes, actually, that's something that I've noticed myself. I feel that you should always... I understand why people don't do this, but you should try to trust people. I'm not saying, give them your wallet or anything like that, but I'm saying trust people in the way that they can handle things. Because, for example, you're right. Whereas if I feel that somebody doesn't trust me to handle a situation, it kind of belittles me as a person. No, you can't do it. You're not smart enough. You don't know what you're doing. You've never done it before. Okay, well, if I haven't done it before, I'll learn. If I haven't done it before, now I learned. But if you can trust somebody, like your children, and give them a situation and say, here, you handle it. You try to figure it out. If you have any problems, let me know. That's how you grow as a person. Because if you don't give them a challenge, no one ever grows. If you do it for them, they don't grow. And I feel that life is experiences and that you should grow from them. And it hurts to have somebody question whether or not you can pass. And it's belittling.
Talk a little bit about how you grew up and your situation at home. What was it like?
When?
from give me an early childhood memory. something with your mother, your father, you know, maybe when everyone was in the same house at some point, and then, you know, things started to change?
I would have to say one of the memories that made me feel free. I always have this reoccurring theme of a freedom and wanting to do whatever I want and just being with whoever I want and doing whatever I want. And one of the most memories I have of that freedom, that feeling of being free, is we would go to school, get up, go to school around, you know, elementary years. And this was every day of my life until I, probably from 5 to 9. Every day, we'd come home, every day, we would play outside from 4 to sometimes 8 to sunset, just playing. And that was so freeing and liberating. The only time someone ever told me, no, don't do that, you can't do that, was when my mom would come out and say, you know, it's sundown, everybody go inside. And I feel like that was very freeing because she, and trusting, because she trusted us not to go far from the house. We had rules. We had boundaries. You know, you can't, we actually couldn't go past our own apartment complex. And every now and then the ball would go over the wall and we would have to climb over the wall or get out of our boundaries to get the ball. But that was always safety reasons. You know, she had the rules. Don't go across the street because the cars, you know, might hit you. Don't go farther than your apartment complex because you don't know who's out there. You don't know what might happen. And although that we stayed in this contained area, it was very trusting of her to just let us be outside, let us play with our friends. You know, we weren't allowed in people's houses, so we didn't do that. We tried not to go in people's houses. Sometimes they wouldn't invite us over. Oh, come in, you know, and have some water or whatever. And we would go in and just like rush out. But that in itself was very freeing. It had boundaries, but it was a very freeing, trusting thing for me. So that is a reoccurring feeling. Like, this is how it should be. I'm doing whatever I want to do. I'm not crossing the boundaries. I know the rules. And you know, every time sunset, sundown, she would just come out, yell at us to come back inside, and we all walked inside.
Another thing that I notice, and you're a very young girl. You're only 23 right now. What do you think it is that makes you think or makes you repel when someone tries to tell you what to do or try to lead you in a certain direction? Why do you think that...
That's wrong?
Yeah, well, what gives you the sense that you have the wisdom to know otherwise?
That is a good question.
Why do you feel entitled to that freedom that you so much want to defend?
I guess because I feel like I know what I'm doing. Why do I feel that way? I think I'm smart. I'm smart enough not to make stupid decisions, I feel. I feel that...
But for you to be smart and go against someone's advice or the direction that they're trying to give you, you have to also feel that you're smarter than that person giving you that advice. And is that how you feel? You feel that you're You see the end, you see the point that you want to be at, and you think that you understand the shortest distance between where you are and where you want to be.
Well, I don't think anything I'm doing is wrong, I guess. The answer to your question. Like, I don't think...
So you've never done anything wrong?
I don't think I've done anything to detriment myself.
Really?
In a really, you know, unsafe way. I mean, that's what I mean against authority. Authority in the way where, you know, my dad wouldn't let me go over people's houses. I didn't understand why.
Yeah, but that's stuff for, you know, when you're 10.
No, I'm talking about like in teens after like 17, 18.
You weren't allowed to go to people's houses at 17 or 18?
No. I was never allowed to go.
Why do you think your father instituted those rules?
I feel that because he felt that it was very unsafe.
Because of his own personal experience?
Yes. Yes, because growing up in Mexico, you always hear of this girl and that girl who was raped, this girl and that girl who was, you know, stolen.
How old was your father when he came to the U.S.?
14. He was 14.
And how old was your father when you were born?
24.
So he was in the country for 10 years?
Yes. Yes, he was in a country for 10 years. But his, you know, it's, you know, Mexico, it's a very, I would like to say liberal kind of country because you don't have the fear of repercussions as much as you do here in the U.S., whereas it would be so easy to call 911, to have someone... defend you, to have someone to press charges against somebody else. And in Mexico, it wasn't like that, really. It's not like that, you know. It's she got raped and she's fucked. And that's it. There's nothing you can do about it.
So your fearlessness and your sense that you're not doing anything wrong or nothing bad's going to happen to you is based on the fact that nothing's happened so far.
I guess so.
What's your earliest childhood memory of your father specifically?
He used to be a truck driver, and he would have my mother and me travel with him on this truck.
Was he delivering things or?
He was a commercial, the big rigs.
Okay.
And on the truck, they, you know, they have like room in the back where you can sleep and you can stay at while you do these huge hauls. And he would travel things from Mexico up all the way to San Francisco. And then down. So we did that. And that's where I slept. And that's where I lived, traveling on this truck. And that's the earliest memory. I remember being on the truck. I remember traveling. I remember being on his lap.
Was that a happy time?
I don't remember being happy because I was so young. I was like... 2 to 3 years old.
But you don't remember anything necessarily negative about it either?
No.
That's just a memory.
Yeah.
And this was, your mother and your father were getting along and everything was fine at this time?
I don't remember them fighting.
No.
I was very young. I don't remember them fighting. The earliest memory of them fighting... was when my brother was born. We lived in this garage, and It was me, my sister, my brother, and he was a baby. And I remember before he was born, everybody would tell us, are you excited? You're going to have a baby brother. Are you excited? And then we would be, yes. And then we would run to our mother and hug her, and she would have the belly. And my brother was born when I was 4, so that must have been when I was 3. And when he was born, I remember my mother and my father fighting, and it got so bad that he left and he took my brother with him. And my mother was so afraid, she called the police, she called her sister. Her sister came down. I wasn't sure what they were fighting about. I'm not sure what happened. I was, like I said, 4. But the cops were there. They asked us if we were okay. They asked us if anyone hurt us or something. And we said no. But we just said, my brother's gone. My baby brother, he's gone. And my dad took him. And that was like the first kind of negative sort of memory. And he left. And
do you know where he went?
My mom said he tried to go to Mexico, but I don't remember. I don't know.
How long was he gone?
Like 2 days, I think. 1 or 2 days. He wasn't gone long.
So what do you want to do with your writing? Is writing something that you feel like you're going to continue to do throughout your life?
Yeah. Yeah. I'll always be writing. That's a way for me to understand what the hell's going on in my head. a way to see what I'm feeling, what's going on. It's sort of kind of to me a diary of what I've been through, what I've learned from, what... when I was a teenager, when I was 14 and I was in high school, I didn't have a mom or dad to talk to. I didn't have somebody to ask about life stories. I didn't have someone tell me, you know, this happens, be aware of this, be aware of that. So what I did is I went to the library and I started reading books about how to be a successful teenager. And I would read these books, and the most interesting part of these books were personal experiences that people have had. And I remember thinking that instead of having someone just tell you what to do, instead of having someone just tell you, you know, how to act and how to be, it was more of a connection. It was more of something I could relate to. If they could just tell me their story, I could read their story, and I could find their lessons of what they went through, and I could learn from that. So in a way, that's what I do when I'm writing. I'm writing, this is what happened, this is what I did, and this is how it turned out. Do I regret any of the decisions I've made in my life? I don't think so, no. I've had decisions where, you know, it didn't come out the way I thought it would, but I wouldn't say I regret them. I regret them. I would say I would handle it better next time. Regret is having, you know, living in the past. It's not moving forward. And I think that if you write down what happened, you write down, you know, you can move forward from just being in the same place, and you can grow from that. And that's what I do. I hope that somebody can read what I wrote, connect to it, learn something that can help them, and then grow from it.
So your goal right now, I believe, is to put together a book, do enough writing to put something together? Do you have any kind of time frame or something when people should be able to find your book available?
I want to get it done. I'm going to give myself a really, really long time. I want to get it done as soon as possible, but I want to get it done before the end of this year. And I want to give myself more time only because I write better when I'm in the moment, in the memory. And you can't always grab that. Well, I can't always grab that when I want. I have to sort of wait. Something happens, reminds me of the memory. I write it down. I'm talking to somebody that reminds me of a memory. I write it down. And so I can, you know, it reminds me so that I can bring it up, think about it, and then write it out, get it over with. I feel like it's a way to myself. Oh, yes, this is what happened. This is what happened. This is what happened. So although it is a jigsaw puzzle and I'm creating one piece, one piece, one piece, one piece, create different memories, when I bring it all together, it'll finally be.
So 6 to 12 months, maybe. Yeah. You hope to have something available. People are probably going to get to know you from the open mics over at the Last Bookstore. It sounds like you plan on doing that more and more. So if anyone wants to check out Eileen Felix, check out the Last Bookstore open mics on Mondays at 8 p.m. The Last Bookstore is on 5th and Spring Street in downtown Los Angeles. And one more time, what's your website?
EFelixStudios.com.
Thanks, Eileen.
Thank you.